Money FM 89.3, Best of the Evening Runway. Under the Radar.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3, and it's now time for Under the Radar with me, Chua Tian Tian. Now, it's literally cherry on the cake to speak to a company said to be the only in the world so far that produces wine from not grapes, but cherries. Now, our guest for today is Frederiksdal, a Danish firm that specializes in beverages like juices and wines made from the Danish Stevens cherry. Now, these are not the sweet cherries we eat during summertime, but those that taste sour with high sugar and acid content. Now, such cherries are called grapes of the north. They are not eaten directly, but are great for making items like sauces, juices, jams, or even wines. Now, back to Frederiksdal, the firm is named after the Frederiksdal estate in southern Denmark, which grows these cherries. It traces back to 1756 and has been owned by the Krabbe family for three generations, who used to sell the cherries to juice manufacturers. Now, but as life would have it, cherry prices tumbled in 2006, prompting its third generation owner to make the cherries farmed into wine and juices on its own instead. Now, the story takes itself forward from there as the firm grows to become one of the biggest wineries in Nordic cities, shipping its products to all parts of the world. Now, so how has Frederiksdal's value proposition changed over the years, and how has that transformation process reaped benefits for the firm? Well, meanwhile, the company has said in a media report that its key export markets now include Singapore, China, the US, and Japan. But what is driving export demand right now, and what will continue to be its key drivers of growth? Well, lots of questions. And joining me on the line is Harold Krabbe, founder of Frederiksdal. Harold, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you on board, Harold. And we've briefly talked about how Frederiksdal is this Danish firm that specializes in beverages like your juices, wines made from the Danish Stevens cherry. In fact, Frederiksdal was named after the Frederiksdal estate, which the cherries were farmed. So very quickly, appreciate if you could take us through the heritage behind the company.
Yes. So my job as owner of this farm, this estate, is obviously to try and for the future farm in a way that we can over time sustain and support the estate. So I have very much in focus that I'm trying to keep my heritage and keep it as this great building, this great piece of land, that I have to maintain it and I have to deliver it in future to future generations. So for me, I've always known I wanted to be a farmer. And so I've educated myself as a farmer. I enjoy farming. But the world today is, you know, farming is a very, it's a commodity. It's actually defining the free market in the sense that there is an endless amount of producers. Buyers are deciding the price. So the only way a farmer really makes money is by being better at doing it than everyone else. Meaning the difference in the profit comes from just making it cheaper than everyone else. And I've been thinking, okay, that's a pretty tough one to go on with in a business life. And I said, how can I change that into, now I say, how can I add value to the products I'm doing? And this is why we are doing the cherry wine. So in the case, for example, selling wine in Singapore, we have a story, we have a brand, we have, now I say, we've looked after the wine for up to 7-8 years before we ship it, we've bottled it, we have even the label, is we're trying to express something. And in this way, we are, now I say, we are having monopoly in the sense that we're the only ones in the world doing what we're doing. Obviously, there are other wines competing with what we're doing. But I just think that this is a great way of farming. And for me, what's most important is that I can point at my cherry tree and I can drink it and I can say, okay, I'm tasting the geography, the soil, everything which is here has been put into this tasted. So to me, it becomes much more valuable. It's a little bit like an artist making his or her own painting and expressing themselves. And this is what I'm doing through a cherry.
Right. I can really tell the passion you put into the cherries and the wines. As a business, Harold, I believe the move to integrate downstream to become a maker of cherry wine and juice manufacturer had to do with cherry prices tumbling in 2006. How serious was the situation and how has your value proposition then shifted?
It's still serious in the sense that what has happened in Europe is that the European community is growing, and sometimes when new countries are coming into the European community, there are subsidized productions, and these are one of the productions which has been heavily subsidized in Eastern Europe when this got became part of the EU, like Romania, Poland, Eastern Germany. So due to heavily subsidized cherry productions, the price has plummeted because there is an overproduction. And at the same time, the varieties of cherries being grown now is more for the reason of making quantity rather than a very good taste. So what's unique about the Stensberg, the Stevensberg cherry, is that it actually belongs to Denmark and has been in Denmark for many decades, thousands of years. So it's a really indigenous species of cherries. This cherry doesn't yield as much, but that's also why the taste is different. It's much more intense. But companies today, they more, you know, they have a juice, they add in things in order to just to make cheaper products. And this is a volumes game where I'm going the other direction. So I'm trying to take a fruit which is indigenous to Denmark. It doesn't give a lot in, as in quantity, but the taste is really, really unique. And I say it's almost like getting a copyright from someone above, because it doesn't grow anywhere else. And we can really say this is unique and you can't get it anywhere else. So this is also part of our brand and we're trying to make it really special. So that's what we think about this the cherry.
Wow, I see. And let's take a look at your products today, Ryder Harold. I believe your product verticals can be split into two parts. One is cherry juices, the other cherry wines, right? Could you take us through the products that come under each vertical? What is the price range we are looking at and which is the most important vertical for you when it boils down to the dollars and cents?
Before answering that question, I think we have to look a little bit how we are branding ourselves. And also, I don't think there is an exact recipe of how to do things. I think it depends on the person doing it. But what we've been doing is we've started off by making a really, really high quality. And this, now I say brand value, when you get a really high quality, is like we do deliver wines for 3-star Michelin restaurants all over the world. Then it trickles down in the system, and that will, we are now focusing on, rather than doing really good wines, we maybe have to look at more volumes, a little bit cheaper products, and make a base for us to actually give us the bread and butter, because selling wines in a very high-end scale all over the world is really expensive. It doesn't give us a lot of cash. It's just a way of marketing ourselves. So we've started up really high with a unique taste, and obviously the best wine is 7 years old, even more 14 when we sell it. And in the other end of the scale, we have the juice, which is, you know, ready three months after harvest, then we can sell. So we can, you know, we can get cash much faster with the juice. So we've been brand building so far, and now I'm looking into my business, and this is the 12th, 13th year that we've been doing this, but we're now looking into how we can create a more volume and cash creating sales now.
Don't mind me asking this, right, Harold? When we look at the price of your juice versus wine, how are they different? And right now, would you say that most of your revenue is contributed by the juices then?
No, right now, our revenue is from purely from wines, and we have about seven wines. So if we take a range in the products we have, we sell fresh cherries in harvest, which is the lowest. This is a commodity. This is the lowest price, and this the prices. We don't make money on that. Basically, not. The competition is simply too hard. And then we start adding value. So then we have the juice. We also have what's called concentrate, and then we go stepwise up the value ladder. And the minute the juice is okay business, but it's not. I'd much rather sell wine because the value is much higher. And then we have different types of wines. We have wine which is just 1 year old when it's being bottled. This is our base wine called vintage. And then we have matured wines, mixed wines from matured wines and young wines. We have a sparkling wine. We have liqueur, which is a juice being added alcohol and sugar, meaning it's not been fermented. This is very famous, the Danish product, actually, especially in Singapore, because it's come to my mind. I don't think Singaporeans really know this, the Singapore Sling at Raffles Hotel is a very famous drink throughout the world. I don't think the Singaporeans really realize, but people, they travel and they have to have this thing at Raffles. But basically, historically, this was made with cherry liqueur. From Denmark historically, so you can see we make wine, but that allows us also to go into the cocktail market, and then we have the oldest wines we have is, if I have to give a comparison to something else in the world, it would be like port wine or sherry wine. So that's the kind of style of wine we are into, but it's unique, and the uniqueness. You find that in the acidity. We have an acidity which is unseen of. So this is what we are trying to present to people. And I think the hard work in this is a little bit that drinking our wines is a first time experience. It's a new gastronomical bubble. Your brain has never had this before, so you have to adapt to that. And with the sales comes then also an educational part, because we have to educate people. People, they drink it and they say, oh, mostly they say, this is really nice, but how can I use it? And then we have to come up with a story. So, for example, in Singapore, we are trying to, chili crab is really nice with some of our wines, actually, because the chili in the crab is quite powerful. Normal wines cannot follow, or they cannot sustain that power. It will just dilute any wine, overpowering the wine. But the sweetness and the acidity will actually merge and what's will yeah come well together in a meal. But then you have your traditions, which we then have to manipulate with, or we have to convince people that this is a really, really great thing to have chili crab and cherry wine.
Right, I see. What a combination. Well, Harold, Frederiksdal prides itself as one of the biggest wineries in the Nordic cities today. I believe you ship your products to all parts of the world. How many markets are you in right now, and what is the scale of your operations in the different markets?
We've been trying to push ourselves into Singapore for now a couple of years, 3 years. And I regard Singapore as a hub for the whole of Asia, because it's a melting pot. You know, everyone comes to Singapore, all of Asia. And we can clearly feel and see that people going to Takashimaya, buying the wines, you know, some are even merchants, and they say, oh, can we maybe take this to Taiwan or Malaysia or whatever? So this is a really good starting point. And also the buying power is very high in Singapore. You have the biggest concentrations of wealth in the world around Singapore, southern China, Taiwan. All so this is our product. aren't cheap, but it's also, yeah. So obviously we're trying to go where people have enough spending power. We've been hit quite hard by COVID in the sense that in the US market, our distribution colleagues, they had to close their business. So we have to start over again. People, they know our wines, but we have actually to put some more effort in the US. And also, what we can see sales-wise is we're trying to tell a story, and the story goes well when we do it directly to the consumers. We should not have too many between ourselves and the consumer, because the story just evaporates and becomes nothing if it has two or three people in between the consumer and us. So we're really trying to be focused on telling stories directly to consumers. We can do web sales. The sales in Singapore is now represented by our importer, Hipsing, who sells our products in occasions at Takeshimaya, meaning at Christmas, at all these fairs which comes along with all these occasions we have. I think on the long run, we have room for a permanent booth, but that's just not my decision only. So, but it's available online. So, you were asking about the prices. So, the juice is about in Sing dollar. It's about 30 Sing dollar. I think just about, yeah, but that's for 1.5 liter of juice. And if I compare to prices with any other cherry products in the world, it's probably a bit more than, it's about double price. But this is simply because it's pure cherry, nothing else. And it's lightly pasteurized, meaning it's stable. But if you compare with other juices, it's from concentrate. It's been, you know, it goes into huge factories. So we have our starting point, or we don't do billions of liters. We just want to do the best of the best in smaller quantities. And then the wines come up about $50 or so on the wines, plus or minus around that scale. So, but obviously, the older the wine is, the more expensive it gets.
Well, Harold, you talk about the US, and I believe you mentioned in a media report in November 2022 that your key export markets at that point in time include, of course, Singapore, you've got China, the US, and Japan. How far is this still the case right now, and who would you consider your customers in the various markets?
So, we are trying actually to be specific on the Singaporean market. We're trying to target women around 30 years of age. Because women, when they drink wine, it's very often men who decide, or even the women buy wine for their men. We can see that all our experiences, and that's actually from an experience we had in Singapore. There was a client who bought our wine. She put it in the fridge. She took a Post-it sticker. She wrote on the wine in the fridge, "Mum's wine." And also, because it has a little bit of sweetness, I think we have a palate which suits the women really well. But this is a huge marketing task because nobody knows what it is. You know, it's on the shelf. You've never heard about it. It has a price, and you have no reference. And this is a hard sell. This is when design becomes really important. Also, our bottle size is a little bit different. It's actually a half liter bottle. And we actually have a saying, less is more, because the wine is quite powerful in its taste. So I think you don't need much wine. You just, you know, a couple of glasses is fine, and you're okay with that. You don't need to have a lot of wine in quantity wise to enjoy it.
If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Harold Krabbe, founder of Frederiksdal. And as you can imagine, Harold, we love talking about money here on Money FM. So we want to zoom in on the transformation process of Frederiksdal's business from a cherry provider to a beverage manufacturer. I'm sure you've put in investments in the manufacturing production facilities, right? How far has that reaped benefits, financial benefits for you guys 18 years down the road since 2006 when that decision was made to pivot to become a beverage manufacturer? In terms of maybe how far have your margins increased or how far has the valuation of the firm increased? Is there any rough gauge over here?
So basically, to be very strictly, so far we haven't made any money yet, because cherry trees takes 6-7 years before they start bearing fruit. From there on, they will bear fruit for the next 20 years. We have to wait 7 years for the wine. So we have to build a winery. So right now we are just about to get started on, now I say, the harvest of our investment. Right now, it's just a matter of a volumes game. We just have to sell more wine all over the world or wherever the market is. So Denmark is doing really well. COVID really shook us up because we couldn't go anywhere. We had problems with the importers. And I don't think we've yet, you know, the cost price per unit is, when you look at it right now, it's quite expensive, because we've made, I've from the beginning prioritized to have a company who could deal with the whole amount of what came out of our orchards. Because in Denmark, it's very, very expensive. It's, now I say, one of the most expensive countries to produce in the world. And Denmark is going away from production countries simply because labor cost is so expensive. You just need computers and you know, high turnover. So I've prioritized to have a setup where I've been looking at how can we have a very high volume to have a low cost per unit, meaning your fixed cost is quite high in the beginning. But once you get volume up, to put it into perspective, right now I'm selling about 30% of our production. The rest I'm just keeping on stock and growing the market. But I can scale up without spending almost any money. So I just have to find more consumers. The wine is there, the building is there, the whole thing is here. It's just, you could also put it from a sales perspective, instead of selling one bottle at a time, we just need to send a container at the time. So it's the same call, but it's just 7,000 bottles instead of 6 in a case.
Looking ahead, right, you talk about scaling up your sales and getting the demand out there. What do you think is the missing piece of puzzle? Because now you've got the supply, it's all about demand, right? What is your go-to-market strategy? Is it targeting the restaurants now?
The restaurants is a good place to start, in the sense that it's not from a business perspective, because they don't use many, many bottles. But people, they get presented the wines in a gastronomical context. And as we get very high recommendations for our wines, the word gets spread, so to say. So that's a marketing issue to be in restaurants and bars. And then I see ourselves moving into maybe more direct to consumer sale. This is working really well in Denmark, where we're spending quite a lot of money doing direct sales, on web sales. Whereas I think in Asia or in the export markets, we need a strong importer who can help us, because there are so many facilities we need to have in a foreign country where we need somebody who has, you know, warehousing, logistics and all these things. So we need to be very close with our importer who needs also to be able to distribute and to be able to do sales as well. So it's a very compact piece of work which has to be done.
And I suppose you're not diversifying your, distributor within a specific market because you want to reduce the number of middlemen that goes through.
Yes. And it's very much about trust as well. We have to decide pricing, and also if things goes up in volume, or we can maybe adjust the prices for both of us. But also the importer has a lot of investment to do. You know, we hire people, marketing, and all these things. So obviously we will help, but we can't do it all when we are not in a specific country.
Right. Now, taking a look at the wider business environment, Harold, it seems like the demand is there because Future Market Insights expects the global fruit wine market to grow from $921 million in 2024 to some $2.486 billion by 2034. We are looking at a CAGR of 10.4% over the forecast period. How far is this a growth rate for Frederiksdal? What will be the key drivers of growth for you guys?
That's interesting what you're saying here. I don't know what that means specifically, in the sense that fruit wine is what you can ask yourself, what is fruit wine? I just know that, you know, I have to be smart in my own business. And this is, my success depends on myself. I'm happy to hear the figures you are now mentioning, but key in any business is liquidity. So I have to look at liquidity all the time in order to be spending my money the right place, the right time, and growing the market all the time in order to survive. And this is our focus right now. So we have a lot of success with the juice. We are trying to sell that more or prioritizing, because it gives us cash straight away. The margins are much smaller. But what's unique about the juice is everybody in the whole world knows what juice is. In this case, it's the cherry juice. But it might be a little bit more expensive. But people, when they taste it, they see the benefits of the juice, the health benefits. They are on it. And they also, the consumption is daily. Whereas a wine is more for an occasion. You don't drink a lot of wine. So this is how we are, you know, trying to make our backbone with the juice, and then we can start tailing up with people. They might ask themselves, okay, this nice cherry juice, okay, they also make wine, let's try the wine. So it could be a door opener. That's how we look at it right now. But you see, before we started our business, we had to have the Frederiksdal brand, and by creating these really nice high-level wines, I think it's been important for us in order to also come up with a juice. Had we just made a juice, it wouldn't have been so mythical. It would be harder to. But that's just something I'm saying. I can't prove it because time has gone.
I was actually about to ask you if supply is a limiting factor for your growth rate, because I believe the Stevens cherry is set to grow best in southern Denmark along the coastlines. But it seems like it is more of a case of, well, having the cash flow in, making the right investments, and then scaling the company then. So what do you then think is the limiting factor, or what do you think is your focus right now? Is it about balancing or getting that perfect ratio of product mix so that you can generate cash flows and make meaningful investments?
Yes, generate cash flow. That's it.
And Harold, before we let you go, could you take us through some future plans for Frederiksdal for the year of 2024? What can we look forward to here in Asia or in Singapore right now?
Well, I'd say I think what we're trying to do is we'll try and segment our market a little bit more, meaning bars. We'll have the vermouth and the liqueur. The juice is available, and the wines also. So we are just getting started in Singapore. You know, this is we just have to get more volume. So we are just looking at the market, scanning, trying to the break-in where it's the easiest path, so to say. On a personal level, in my business, what I enjoy about making wine is that I plant trees. I'm actually trying to save the world in the sense that we capture CO2. We're trying to do things in an environmentally right way. our carbon footprint should be low. And I'd love to do more of that system on my farm where we have much more biodiversity. We are having not annual crops, but perennial crops. We have what's called agroforestry, where we have maybe chickens and hens going under the trees, you know, having lots of different crops blended together. So we don't have to stress the farmland as we do today.
I can still sense the passion in you for agriculture, even as we look to manufacture the cherry juices. And thanks a lot for the insights, Harold. That was Harold Krabbe, founder and owner at Frederiksdal. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.